Good morning. I was just waiting for Efrat to get here. And once Efrat got here, we can begin. I said a shir in Efrat, and they asked me last night, is it going to be the same shir this morning? So I said, no. I'm going to give a different shir tomorrow morning. So they, I don't know why, but they were thrilled why in 12 hours, we just about made it, in 12 hours they're going to hear two shiurim from me. And they were very happy about it. And I was happy that they were happy. All right. Still there? Not so bad? Move it away. All right. The sheets that you have in front of you look formidable. They look frightening. There's something about them that says this may be heavy. Fact is, it's going to be heavy, but not too. I think there may be some contemporary relevance to what we're going to talk about this morning. Of course, as is traditional, the shir before Purim is dedicated to Purim. The shir before Purim. I do want to, at the outset, I want to say that I was inspired. Ideas and thoughts and questions came to my mind at this recent convention of Young Israel rabbis on February. You'll hear more about that later. You'll hear a great deal about that later. At that conference, a friend of mine, I hadn't seen him for years, gave me a sefer that he had written recently that raised certain questions. And I'm going to deal with those questions. I may not go in the same direction that he goes in responding to them, but he certainly got my curiosity all worked up. His name is Rabbi Nachman Cohen, Yonkers, and he inspired me. So I like to give a yashukayah for a yashukayah. Belongs. We may part company at some point, but that's okay. Maybe because it's Purim and things don't have to necessarily be in order, I didn't even put in numbers on the source sheet, but I'm going to start at the right-hand side of the sheet. And we're really going to study one Gemara in Masechet Megillah. We're learning Gemara today. You've come a long way. And we're going to have to try and understand this Gemara. And in order to understand this Gemara, we're going to have to deal with other Gemarot. And don't let anybody tell you that you're not capable. You're eminently capable. Don't stop becoming Chabanim and Poskotov She'elot Hilchatiyot. That's already moving in on my turf. All right. That's right. Within the context of the Nahafachu. Okay. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda said the following: Sholcholahem Esther lachachomim. Esther sent a message, a letter to the wise men. Obviously, we're talking about the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the men of the Great Assembly. Remember, the Purim story takes place at the end of the 70 years of the Babylonian exile. Jews have already begun to return to Eretz Israel, not in their great masses. And the entire story of Purim takes place in Golos, out there in Paras and Moda. So she sent the following request, and we will see from the Gemara that this is her first request. The request is, Kavuni Lidorot. Establish me for all generations. Meaning, make the Purim a Yontif for all generations. Turn it into a Yontif. Sholchula, so they sent a message back to her, Kina at Me'oreret Oleinu Lebein Ha'umot. Do you want to create jealousy amongst the nations of the world toward us? How is it going to look for the Goyim that we are celebrating the fall of Haman, the hanging of he and his 10 children, 75,000 Goyim killed b'chol in all of the 127 states of the realm? So the answer, Knesset HaGedolah said, you're going to create jealousy, and worse, kinah over him means you're going to bring down the wrath of the nations of the world upon us. Sholcholahem, so she sent a message back, kvar ktuva ani al divrei hayamim l'malchei matai uparas. I am already written in the history books of Madai and Paras. It's there already. It's nothing new. It's not something that's going to come as a great shock to them. They know the whole story. There was no denial yet of the story. There was no revisionist history. There was no post-Mordechaic position that was taken. Everybody knew the story. So she says, this is not going to raise the ire of the nations of the world. So the Gemara goes on to say, Rav and Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Chaviva, there are four rabbis that are mentioned, Maslu, they learned. And Bekula Seder Moed, in all of Seder Moed, in other words, the Gemaras that are part of that section of Shas which deals with Yom Tovim, Kol Kihai Zugo, wherever you have this group of four, Chalufei Rabbi Yochanan and Ma'ayil Rabbi Yonatan, there are those who take out Rabbi Yochanan and put in Rabbi Yonatan. Anyway, these four, Sholcholahem Estu L'Chachomim Kitvuni L'Dorot. It means the following, of course, that with regard to request number one, since there was no response from the rabbis of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, after Esther had said, everybody knows the whole story anyway, so that means that they did agree to establish Purim as a Yontif. Now Esther is emboldened by her first victory. You know, when you get a victory by the Bagat, you understand, by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, you go in for the next. Sholcholahem Esther l'chachamim. Esther sent a message to the wise men, Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the men of the great assembly, Kitvuni l'dorot, write me for all generations. The first question, the first request of Esther's was, Kivouni l'dorot, establish me as a yontif. Okay, it's a yontif. Now she wants that the story of Purim should be written and become part of the Tanakh, Kitvuni l'dorot, that the Megillah that she wrote should become part of Torah, Nevi'im, Uktuvim, Kitvuni l'dorot. Sholchulah, so they sent a message to her. This is a pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk says, Halo kotafti l'cho sholishim, shalishim v'lo ribeim. I have written for you three times, from which the Gemara learns three times and not four times. And you'll see it immediately what the Gemara means. Ad shematzolo mikra katur b'Torah, until they found a pasuk that's written in Torah, and this is at the end of Parshat Beshalach, after the first war that was waged against Amalek. K'tov zot zikaron b'sefer, write this as a commemoration in a sefer. That means, remember, at the end of Parshas Beshalach, it says that the war against Amalek should be inscribed in a book, K'tov zot zikaron b'sefer. What does it refer to? Because there are a number of references to the war against Amalek. Number one, at the end of Parshat Beshalach, there was the struggle. There's the sneak attack of Amalek. Moshe Rabbeinu tells Yahushua, Bechar lono anoshim, choose people that say hilachim ba'amalek, go and wage war with Amalek. Mocha, tomorrow I'm going to be at the top of the mountain. And as Moshe Rabbeinu was at the top of the mountain praying, there is Yahushua doing battle with Amalek. At the end of Parashat Shoftim, in Dvarim, there we come to the next parasha, the parasha of Zochor et Asher Osa Lecha Amalek, remember that which Amalek did to you, Asher Korchor Baderech Vayizanev Becho Kol HaNechesh Olim Acharecho, the parasha of Zochor that we're going to read in Yerz Hashem this Shabbos. That's the second time Amalek is mentioned. The third time Amalek is mentioned, after Shaul is anointed as king, Shmuel comes to him and tells him in the name of God, Anochi Shachticha Lemelech, I have anointed you as king over the Jewish people, Va'atolech, now go vihikita et Amalek and destroy Amalek. Huh? That's going to be the Haftorah for this Shabbos, the Haftorah of Parashat Zachar. It's, I think, chapter 15 or 16 in Samuel 1. Okay? Voila. So that means there are three references to the struggle against Amalek. So there are going to be two opinions in the Gemara. One opinion in the Gemara is that, listen, it says it should be written three times. It is written three times. And therefore there's no place for writing it a fourth. But there's going to be a second opinion that says the two references in Torah are about precisely the same battle. So the two references in Torah at the end of Parashat Bashalach and at the end of Parashat Shoftim are both dealing with one battle. The struggle against Amalek in the days of Shmuel and Shaul is battle number two, which is the third, Mordechai and Esther against Haman, which therefore means that there is now license to write a Megillah, and that Megillah should be part of the Kitvei HaKodesh. It should be part of Tanakh. So here the Gemara says, K'tov Zot Zikoron B'Sefer, K'tov Zot Masha Katov Kan, write that which is written here. U'B'Mishneh Torah. This is the second opinion that I told you. That which is written here at the end of B'Shalach, and that which is written in Mishneh Torah is Sefer, Devarim. That's one. Zikaron, K'tov Zot Zikaron, Masha Katov B'Neviim, what is written in the Neviim, in Shmuel. Basefer, Masha Katov B'Megillah. Basefer means that which is written in the Megillah, which means the Megillah should be part of the Kitvei HaKodesh, it should be part of the Tanakh. Kitanoi, the Gemara says, this is a difference of opinion of the Tanaim. Kitanoi. K'tov zot, that pasuk at the end of B'Shalach, K'tov zot, Zikaron B'Sefer, K'tov zot, Masha Kosov Kan, Zikaron, Masha Kosov, the Mishneh Torah. There are those who say that B'Shalach and Mishneh Torah, Shmos and Devarim are two separate ones. That's two already. Shmuel is three times and not four. So Esther cannot be part of the Kitvei HaKodesh. K'tov zot Masha Katov Kan, Zikaron Masha Katov B'Mishneh Torah, B'Sefer is Masha Katov B'Neviim, that which is written in the Neviim. So there's no place anymore for Esther to be part of the holy writings. Divrei Rebbe Yehoshua, those are the words of Rebbe Yehoshua. Yes? From the pasuk that's brought before Halo Kotafti Lecho Sholishim. That's a much longer discussion. But the Gemara understands that pasuk as meaning that you can write three references of Amalek, but not four. That's the assumption that we're working under. If I'm going to go into that, I'll never get to the shir today. And I am intent on getting to the shir. But that's it. You know, this is the information that we need, that there can only be three written references, K'tov, Zot, Zikaron, Basefer. So by the way, there is another place that explains to us that it's three. K'tov, Zot, write this, Zikaron, a commemoration, Basefer. That strengthens the pasuk in Mishlei that says, Halo katavti l'chosh shalishim. So now Rabbi Yehoshua says, no, Esther is not part of the Kitvei HaKodesh. Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i Omer, Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i says, K'tov Zot, Masha Katuv Kan Ube Mishneh Torah. Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i says, no, K'tov Zot, write this, is Bishalach and Sefer Devarim. Zikaron, what is written by Nevi'im, Basefer, Masha Katuv, the Megillah. Okay? So here we have a machloket between Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i and Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i, it may become important to know, was an uncle of Bar Kochla, who rebelled against Rome. Rabbi Yehoshua lived maybe a little earlier than he did. Rabbi Yehoshua was one of the people who was very close to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the Gadol b'Yisrael at the time of the destruction of the Second Temple. And you may recall the story that he was part of the movement to better understand it in its historical context. He was part of the peace movement who wanted to give Yerushalayim into the hands of the Romans, because the situation was a completely different one. The situation was that the city had absolutely no way of fighting. They had lost all ability to fight. It was a matter of Yerushalayim turning into Matsada or saving some remnant. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had to get out of the city in order to meet with Vespasian, the commander-in-chief of the Roman forces. The Gemara in Gittin tells us the only way he was able to get out, because the city was in the hands of the radical right, the Baryonim, the zealots held the city. So they, the Gemara says that they let the word out that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is ill. Finally, they say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is dead, and Rabbi Yehoshua is one of those who carries the casket out of the city. And finally, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gets to Vespasian. He talks with him, and the end is that he's able to save Yavne v'chachomeha. He asks him, Tenli Yavne v'chachomeha, give me Yavne and her wise men. What's important over here is that Rabbi Yehoshua lives at the time of the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. We're talking about 400-500 years after the Purim story. The Purim story is at the end of 70 years after the destruction of the first temple. The history here is going to be very important. We're talking about 500 years later now, 500 years later. And there's a machloket between Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i whether Esther is part of the Tanakh. Wait a minute. Hadn't that decision already been made by the men of the Great Assembly in the days of Esther? Esther had sent a message to the men of the Great Assembly, to Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, Kitvuni L'dorot, write me for all generations. And they had arrived at a decision that yes, there's place to write a Megillah. What are Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i raising the question all over again? We thought that it was all over with. 500 years earlier, it had been paskin. And now Rabbi Yehoshua comes along and says that it's not part of the Kitvei HaKodesh. It can be considered an igeret. It's a letter. The Gemara is going to go on to say that even Rabbi Yehoshua, who holds that it is not part of the writings, of the holy writings, but Esther was written Beruach HaKodesh, and therefore you can read it in public, there is a mitzvah to read it in public, but that should be part of the Kitvei HaKodesh? No. Why is the question raised all these years later? What's happening over here? We thought that the question had already been decided. Can one Bezdin simply go ahead and open up questions that had already been decided by a previous Sanhedrin? Alright? I'm going to take you through Gemara 2. You're going to have so much Gemara today. Next to the Gemara from Megillah, we have an unbelievable piece of Gemara in Masechet Brachot. I spent so much time thinking about this Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, you see that on the left hand side? Maaseh b'Talmud Talmid Echad. It's underlined on the left hand side of the page. It says Brachot Chav Zayin on the bed. Tanu Rabbanan Maaseh b'Talmid Echad Shebo Lifnei Rebbe Yehoshua. Significant, of course, it's the same Rebbe Yehoshua who says that the Megillah is not part of the Kitvei HaKodesh, not part of the Holy Writings. There was a student who came before Rabbi Yehoshua. Amalei said to him, he poses the following question to Rabbi Yehoshua: Tfilat Arvit Rishut O Chova? To Davin Mariv, is it compulsory or is it
voluntary?
Is it voluntary or compulsory? Rishut or chova? On Alei, Rabbi Yeshua's response was, Arvis is Rishus. If you want to daven, you daven. If you don't want to daven, you don't daven. Bolif Neid Abin Gamliel, he came before Rabbi Gamliel, the same student comes to Rabbi Gamliel, who is the president of the Sanhedrin. The Gemara is going to blow your mind. I've learned this Gemara so many times and it didn't shake me up until now as it does. The student comes before Rabbi Gamliel and he said to him, Tfilat Arvit Rishut O Chovah? He asks precisely the same question to Rabbi Gamliel, who is the president of the Sanhedrin. It reminds me of a story. Somebody in Harnof calls and asks me a shaila, and from the shaila I see that this is a shaila that didn't arise today. It's been a shaila for many years. I said, you're not from here. You had this problem in your community in the United States. You didn't ask your rabbi? So she says, of course I asked my rabbi. She says, what are you asking me? He says, well, I want a second opinion. So I told her, I may be a rabbi doctor, but I'm not a medical doctor, you understand? You think you're going around asking for second opinions? And here is this Talmud Echad, this student, has asked Rabbi Yehoshua, what's the halach, is tefillat arvit obligatory or voluntary? And Rabbi Yehoshua told him it's voluntary. Now he comes to Rabbi Gamliel, the president of the Sanhedrin, and he asks the same question. Amalei, and you know what Rabbi Gamliel's response was? Chava, obligatory. We now have a machloket between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua. Amalei, so this student says, V'halo Rabbi Yehoshua, Amalei Rishut, but Rabbi Yehoshua told me that it's Rishut. Amalei, I mean, this is, of course, creating all of the elements that are necessary for an explosion. In other words, he tells the head of the Sanhedrin, the president of the Sanhedrin, you're telling me that Tfilat Arvit is Chova, but Rabbi Yehoshua told me it's Rishus. So Rabbi Gamliel says to him, Hamtein, wait, Ad Sheikonsu Balei Tresin Lebet HaMedrash. Wait until the great warriors come into the Beis Medrash. He means the great Talmidei Chachamim of the Sanhedrin. Wait till we all gather, and then we're going to deal with this. We're going to have this out once and for all. Kishenichnasu Balei Tresin, when the great Talmidei Chachamim entered the Beis Medrash, Omar HaShoel V'Shoal, the anonymous student, the Talmid Echad, and the Gemara seems to be concealing his identity. The Shoel, the questioner, got up and he asked the question, Tfilat Arvit Rishut O Chova? Is Tfilat Arvit, is Marav voluntary or is it obligatory? Amalei Rabbi Gamliel, Sir Rabbi Gamliel said, Chova. The president of Sanhedrin said that it is obligatory. Amalei Rabbi Gamliel, Sir then Rabbi Gamliel said, to lechacham and to the wise men, klum yesh adam shecholek bedavazeh. Is there anybody who disagrees? Anybody here who disagrees? So you know who pipes up from amongst the Sanhedrin? Rabbi Yehoshua. And he says, no! Nobody disagrees. Amalai. Rabbi Yehoshua laughed. Amalai said, Rabbi Gamliel said, V'halo mishimcha amruli. In your name they told me reshus. Gechapt. In your name they told me that you paskind otherwise, that tulas arvis is voluntary. Amalei, so the president of the Sanhedrin, Rabbi Gamliel, said to Rabbi Yehoshua, Yehoshua, amod al raglecha. Yehoshua, stand on your feet. V'yo'idu b'cha. And they're going to testify about you. What we're going to witness now is Rabbi Gamliel treating Rabbi Yehoshua with such frightening lack of respect. In other words, in a sense, we're going to keep sitting, and you stand over there. We're going to testify about you. You're not going like in a bet mishpat. Amad Rabbi Yehoshua Raglav. Rabbi Yehoshua stood on his feet. V'omar ilmalei ani chai b'hu meiz yochal achai l'hakrish et hameiz. He said the following: if I would be alive and Rabbi Gamliel would be dead, so then I can deny that I ever said it. There's nobody here to say otherwise. But now that I'm alive and he's alive, how can he was an honest man, you understand? He couldn't hear it's in the presence of Rabbi Gamliel. How can he tell Rabbi Gamliel, no, I never said it? Rabbi Gamliel simply continued on with the shear. He kept sat and continue to darshan, and Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yehoshua, is still standing. The Rabbi Yehoshua, Omid al Hakatlov, Rabbi Yehoshua, standing on his feet. Achadinimu kol ha'am, until all of the people, in other words, there was already an undercurrent of murmuring. The men of the Sanhedrin became very upset about the scene that's taking place before their very eyes. Rabbi Yehoshua is a giant be Israel. Giant. When you find out who the questioner was, you will see that the questioner was a great giant, and if he asks Rabbi Yehoshua, then Rabbi Yehoshua is a giant amongst giants. So they all began to get upset. V'amrul chutzpes haturgeman amod v'amad. Chutzpes haturgeman was the one. They used to use a turgman. They didn't have one of these machine kalach over here. They didn't have a loudspeaker, an electronic loudspeaker. You know what they had? A loud speaker. Rabbi Gamliel would say what he had to say to chutzpis haturgman, and chutzpis haturgman is the one who would beam it out. If I'm not mistaken, Chutzpes HaTurgman was later one of the Asara Harugei Malkus, one of the 10 who was put to death by Rome. And they describe the tongue, you understand, the tongue that taught so much Torah, the tongue of Chutzpes HaTurgman. The Turgman was the one who spoke loud so that the whatever Rabbi Gamliel said should be heard. So they stop him. The men of the Sanhedrin, we're talking about an unbelievable scene that's taking place that day in the Sanhedrin. This was not a daily occurrence. This was not the Knesset, you understand. This was the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And therefore, they said, Atkam and Etzari V'Nezel, how long are we going to continue to cause pain to Rabbi Yehoshua? Because this is the third time that there's been a clash of wills between Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Gamliel. Last year, in Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Gamliel calls painting. There was a machloket between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. What day is Rosh Hashanah? No. And then the mail it means when Yom Kippur will be. Now, that's a. Yeah, he told Rabbi Yeshua, the Mishnah says, I want you to come with your stick and your tarmil, your meil, and your tick on the day that is Yom Kippur according to your calculation. And Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, in fact, did that. Now, that was a serious difference of opinion. There's a difference of opinion when Rosh Hashanah, when Yom Kippur, and when Pesach and Shavuos and Sukkot. That's serious. And Rabbi Yehoshua bent before the will of Rabbi Gamliel. There was another machlokes in Masechet Bechorot, the Meisah de Rav Tzadok, Tzare, we don't have to go into it. There also Tzare, he calls him Tzar. Hochenami Tzare, now also he's causing him pain. Tovina Abre, let's remove Rabbi Gamliel, let's impeach Rabbi Gamliel. Impeach Rabbi Gamliel. I mean, not every day is a president of the Sanhedrin who is a direct descendant of Hillel and Ezra, not every day does it happen that they are removed from office. Anyway, yes?
Did you use the wrong procedure of Hillel? Because when they faced the king of the Sanhedrin, he used to be the one who was the end of the line to speak first.
No, the end of the lines, the end of the line speaking first was only in a case of capital punishment. Because in a case of capital punishment, we are afraid that the younger members of the Sanhedrin might very well change their minds when they hear the opinion of the head of the court. But over here, the whole thing was a tetzugah. It was a setup, the whole thing. He knows what Rabbi Yehoshua has said, and he disagrees with Rabbi Yehoshua. Now what's going to happen is, for the first time in history, they want to impeach the president of the Senate, and the question is, who are they going to put in his place? So the Gemara, I'm not going to read the Gemara now, but basically the Gemara says that, maybe one line is important, yeah. The Gemara says that they decided on Rabbi Loza ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Now, if you'll take a look at the last of the wide lines, Amalahu, Ezel ve'imlech b'inshe beiti, I'm going to go ask the people of my house. In other words, he's offered the presidency of the Sanhedrin. You see the last of the wide lines right over here. Amalahu, Ezel ve'imlech, I'm going to go ask Anshei Beiti, the people of my house. Then the Gemara says, you know who the people of his house are? Also, the Imlech Bidabitu, he went and he asked his wife. So his wife tells him, the Gemara is going to go on to say that his wife tells him, listen, just like they were able to impeach Rabbi Gamliel, how do you know that the same thing is not going to happen to you? What do you have to accept this for? So he says to her, you know, it's worthwhile using some very beautiful and precious object one day, even if I'm not going to have it later. It's better to have been president of the Sanhedrin and lost than never to have been president of the Sanhedrin at all. But he had a problem. He had a problem. And this problem, I understand the problem. I remember I came to Toronto, I was, I'm not going to tell you the year, I was 24 years old, and I came to be Rosh Shiva. So one of the heads of the community says, Rabbi Gold, hast ein große Chesuren, you have one big drawback, ob es wird besser in Tilg Chitug, but from day to day it gets better, you're too young. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, is 18 years old. So overnight he becomes white. I know what that means too. It didn't happen then, it happened later. Then I turned white. Anyway, therefore, in the Haggadah, the Gemara says, therefore in the Haggadah, the Mishnah in Brachas, where Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, "Harei ani kiven shivim shana," I'm like 70 years old. He wasn't 70 years old, but he looked distinguished. He looked distinguished. There's one big question. Why does Rabbi Gamliel make such a big issue over the question of whether Mariv is Rishus or Chova? So Rabbi Yeshua said, so what? I mean, is this, the whole world depends on whether Arvis is Rishus or Chova? Don't get me wrong, I don't want to minimize it, but is this the issue? Is this the issue over which you tear apart a Sanhedrin, where you have an impeachment process? You bring a new member into the Sanhedrin. By the way, the Gemara goes on for a whole page to describe Oto Hayom. That day became one of the greatest days. It turned out ultimately to be one of the greatest days in the history of the Sanhedrin. Because you know what happened on that day? First of all, they opened the doors and they permitted anybody who wanted to come in, because Rabbi Gamliel had numerous causes. Rabbi Gamliel only permitted in students who he felt were worthy of being there. They opened it up, and the Gemara says they, all sorts of difference of opinion, how many many more students joined the Sanhedrin on that day, and every question that had been in doubt before the Sanhedrin was paskan on that day. And there are many Mishnayot in Shas that talk about Oto Hayom, that day, this was paskan on that day, that was paskan on that day. It was a great day. Everything over an issue of whether Mariv is Rishut or Chova. If there would have been a spectacle of this sort over the question of what day is Yom Kippur, I can understand it, because then we're talking about something that goes to the very heart of leadership. What are you talking about? Who's going to make the decision? What's going to happen to Klal Yisrael if there are two Yom Kippurs, you understand? Rabbi Gamliel says one day, and Rabbi Yeshua says another day. It will sow the seeds of total destruction of Klal Yisrael. It's all over. You'll have those who'll hold this day Yom Kippur, you'll have those who'll hold that day Yom Kippur, and then you'll have those who'll hold 2 days Yom Kippur. It's madness. You can't run a country like that. It can't be. Why Mariv? And then the whole story ends. And you see that little kethar over there on the left-hand side of the page that's underlined? At the end, the Gemara tells us, lets us in on the secret, V'oto Talmid Reb Shimon ben Yochai Hava. For some strange reason, they held this secret until the end of the Gemara. You know who that Talmud was? That Talmud was Reb Shimon ben Yochai. Rav Shimon ben Yochai, I mean, do I have to tell Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael who Rav Shimon ben Yochai is? So now we have a problem with Rav Shimon ben Yochai. You already asked the Shaila of Rabbi Yoshua whether Arvis is Rishus HaChova. Why are you going now to ask Rav Gamliel? And not only that, Rav Shimon ben Yochai is also the one who creates all the problems, because he's the one who turns to Rav Gamliel and says, you hold that it's Chova, it's obligatory. Rav Yoshua told me the opposite. But also HaTalmid, that student was Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. I think we're at the point that we have to begin to let you in on what may be going on over here. Following the destruction of the second Bet HaMikdash, There was a tremendous amount of confusion in the Jewish world. What does it mean? The event that has now happened, what does it mean? Does this mean that it's all over for Klal Yisrael? God has abandoned us? There is no Bet HaMikdash? And there won't be one in the foreseeable future? Or is this a temporary setback? Is it possible that we may yet be able to get Rome to give us permission to rebuild the Bet HaMikdash? Are we forever going to be under the heels of Rome? if you want to understand the confusion in some small way, just take the confusion, and this Rabbi Cohen mentions, take the confusion or the differences of opinion following the establishment of the State of Israel in our time up until today. Is it the Atchalta de Gula? Is it the beginning of redemption? Is it Reishit Smichad Gulateinu? Is it the beginning of the flowering of our salvation? Is it just another episode in the ongoing history of the Jewish people, an episode that may very well come to a tragic end at some moment? Nobody really knows, and therefore everybody, for whatever reason, they take certain positions. And by the way, the positions that people take on this issue are positions that people hold with great vehemence. Zaldei b'shtarab, even if you find yourself in a shul on Yom Ha'atzmaut in the morning, when there are those who are saying kinnis, and there are those who are saying tachnun, and there are those who are saying half hallel without a bracha, and there are those who are saying all of hallel without a bracha, and there are those who are saying all of hallel with a bracha, you understand? With, you have the total confusion, and the confusion is, of course, because there may be differing sources as to what indeed is the meaning of this. We don't have a Navi to tell us what it really means, so we have to look back into the sources and we may find different approaches. We have to take ourselves for a few minutes into the framework of that historic period of time. They've just lost the Beit HaMikdash. This is a shattering experience. Is it something that will pass, or is it something that's going to be permanent for the longer period of history? They have absolutely no way of knowing. Rabbi Yehoshua was a Levi who served in the Beis HaMikdash. In Masechet Sukkah, Rabbi Yehoshua is the one who describes everything that happened by the Simcha Beit HaShoeva. There's only one thing he leaves out. Mariv. Rabbi Yehoshua lived at the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. He was there at the Churban. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was his Rebbe. He's the one, Rabbi Yehoshua is one of those who took Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai out of the city. It's in the aftermath now. So now what's going to be? Obviously, there are those who hold that this is a passing episode. And ultimately, we are going to get Rome. You know, Caesars come and Caesars go, but we're going to get permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And you should know, as they talked, as Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai made all sorts of promulgations, all sorts of laws and enactments on the basis of Mehero Yibone HaMikdash. Quickly, speedily, the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. And you know what they think of at that period of time? By next year. Next year, this time, we're going to be in the Beis HaMikdash. Wasn't it necessary to get the permission of Koresh, king of Persia, in order to build the second Beis HaMikdash? They have absolutely no way of assessing the period of time in which they lived. Because, first of all, there were no Nevi'im who even described the Churban of the second Beit HaMikdash. There's no description of that. There is nothing in the prophets to tell us what is going to happen. So they have no way of knowing. What it may depend on is, you know, new Caesar, and the fact is that Rabbi Yehoshua is one of those who went on a number of missions with Rabbi Gamliel, with no less a figure than Rabbi Gamliel, who made him stand, Yehoshua, Amod al Raglecha. Rabbi Yehoshua was part of a delegation of rabbis that went a number of times to Rome to speak to Rome on behalf of the Jewish people. Gemara even tells us the story. They're on their way back. They're on their way to Rome. Rabbi Akiva is on the boat, Rabbi Yeshua is on the boat, Rabbi Gamliel is there, and the only one who has an esrig, a lulav and esrig, is Rabbi Gamliel, and it cost a thousand zehuvim, you understand. First of all, it means that if it meant leaving Eretz Yisrael for Yom Tov because there may be something terribly important to do for Klal Yisrael in Rome, they did it. And then the Gemara describes how Rabbi Gamliel gave the lulav and esrig to Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua gave it to Rabbi Akiva, and they all benched lulav and esrig on the boat. That means they're living in a period of time about which there's a great question. Is this a temporary setback for the Jewish people, or is this something that is going to be of long enduring for a long period of time? In other words, do we give up hope that the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt in our days, or do we continue to hope and work for day after day for the reconstruction of the Beit HaMikdash? We will see in a few moments that even in the days of Rabbi Yeshua, he went through all sorts of ups and downs, and we're talking about serious ups and downs. Rabbi Yeshua is the one who goes to Rome to speak to a Caesar by the name of Nerva. You never even heard of him, most probably. You know why you never heard of him? Because Nerva remained in power for no more than 18 months. I don't remember whether he died a natural death or not a natural death, unimportant. But Nerva gave Rabbi Yeshua permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. It's there in the history books. Can you see? All of a sudden, great hope! Great hope! Rabbi Yeshua doesn't know that Nerva is going to live only 18 months, and the next one is Trajan or Hadrian, and they go to work on him that he should rescind that permission. So he decides not to rescind it, but he sends an edict, yes, you can build the Beit HaMikdash on Har HaBayit, but you have to move it 15 amos to the right or to the left, which means that it would not, the Makom HaMikdash would not be on the Makom HaMikdash, which is another way of saying it's all over. So they're living through a very, very confusing period of time. The Gemara describes, in a sense, not in the words that I'm saying, but it's very clear that that's what the Gemara has in mind. Most probably one of the first Tanaitic writings of all was what's called Megillat Ta'anit. What was Megillat Ta'anit? There were miracles that apologies. They were semi-Yom Tov, minor Yom Tov, 40 of them. After the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, you have so many different places in Shas where the Gemara asks, Gilat Ta'anit still valid or is it not valid? Do we keep those 40 Yom Tov or don't we keep those 40 Yom Tov? What's the question of whether we keep those Yom Tov or we don't keep those Yom Tov? Is the Churban of the second Beit HaMikdash final? Or are we living in just a temporary period of setback and soon everything is going to be the way it always was? What adds to the confusion is that after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, Jews were taken off into exile. But here they're not taken into exile. Everybody remains in place in Eretz Yisrael. So could be there's hope that temporary setback, then we'll rebuild it. And of course, during the years following the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, there were different opinions as to the significance of the period of time. And you know what the code word for it was? Mariv. Mariv is the tefillah that Yaakov Avinu composed in the dark of night as he is on his way off into exile. If you hold that Mariv is obligatory, you are making an assessment of the historic period in which we live. Rabbi Gamliel said, he had reached the point, we cannot continue to believe that we're going to get the Beit HaMikdash back. We've got to finally accept the reality. The reality is Churban. That's it. Now let's get on with our lives.
Rabbi Yehoshua held, no. The period of time in which we find ourselves is a temporary one, and therefore Mariv is voluntary, because Mariv, which is the filler of darkness and night and Golas, not obligatory, it's optional, because we're going to pull out of this. We're on our way out. Reb Shimon ben Yochai. You understand, Reb Shimon ben Yochai, do you know the story of Reb Shimon ben Yochai? Reb Shimon ben Yochai was one of the great fighters against Rome. He challenged Rome. That's why he and his son had to flee and hide in a cave for 13 years. Reb Shimon ben Yochai never gave up on the reconstruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. He was part of the radical, right. And in a sense, I believe that's why the Gemara leaves the great message at the end. Who was the Talmud that asked the question? Now we understand why the Talmud asked the question both of Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Gamliel. Because what Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai wants, he wants the issue to be debated openly. What is the significance of the period of time in which we live? Are we living in a time of Churban? Or are we living in a time of passing stage? Is it all going to change, or is it not going to change? It also relates to another issue. The other issue is, if this is a passing stage, then what's the significance of Purim? Isn't the whole Yom Tov of Purim strange? So there was a Gzerah. The first time in Jewish history there was a Gzerah. L'hashmid, l'harav, l'harved, eskola, yehudim, minah, batzokim, tapenoshim. How did Chachmei Yisrael look at that period of time? And I found this in the writings of Rav Kook. He says the debate between Esther and the men of the Great Assembly is that the men of the Great Assembly said yes, there was a terrible threat, a threat of destruction upon the Jewish people, but this threat of destruction is something that is charig, exceptional and unusual in Jewish history. Something this, we have to make a Yom Tov, and we have to make a part of Tanakh that's going to deal with this. What are you talking about? Alright, so it happened. Yeah, they had lived through Paro, but by Paro it really was Kolah Ben Ayilo. That one particular period of time, Kolah Ben Ayilo, that is some that's born. By Yoda, Tashvichu, you'll throw him into the yard. But the Chachamim, and remember, there's a big difference between the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah and Esther. The difference between the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah and Esther is the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah can only talk by virtue of their life's experience or the experience of Jewish history. There had never been anything like it, and they assumed that there would never be anything like it again. And therefore, I don't need a Megillah that's part of Tanakh to deal with something that's simply not going to be relevant in Jewish history. Esther was one of the Sheva Nevios. Esther was one of the seven prophetesses. The prophet is able to see beyond the limitations of history. And do you know what Esther sees? This is not going to be the first time. There are going to be other times. And there are going to be times at which the enemy is not simply going to make a gzera, but he's going to carry it out. She knows that, because she sees beyond the limited view of physical man. And Anshei Knesset HaGedolah can't see what it is that she sees. Therefore, Esther's position is, I have good news and I have bad news. The bad news is there are going to be other great threats like this to the Jewish people. The good news is we're going to survive it. And you know what she tells them? Do you know by what strength we're going to survive it? we're going to survive it because we're going to read Megillas Esther. And we're going to find that within, between the lines of history, there's a Rebbein Shel Elam. It may be bad, it may be very bad, it may be infinitely worse than Haman, but we're going to survive it. So the question still remains, 500 years, 600 years later, why is the issue reopened by Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i? The issue is reopened because they have to take a second look now at Megillat Esther, the story of Purim. Is the story of Purim something of passing significance? Or is it part of Jewish history? Is it built into Jewish history? If it's of passing significance, then it may very well be that this Churban Bayit Sheni is of no more than, well, you know, it will be an episode in history. We're going to get over it. We're going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and we're going to start bringing Kabbalists, and there's going to be a Kohen Gadol, and everything is going to be all hunky-dory all over again. Everything back the way it was. Just have a little patience. Rabbi Yehoshua is one of those who holds that it's going to change. It's going to be good. It's going to be good for the Jews. Rabbi Gamliel is the, well, I don't know what you're supposed to call them. Call Rabbi Gamliel a realist? Rabbi Gamliel has already arrived at the conclusion that we're in for a long haul. It may very well be also that Rabbi Gamliel doesn't want that. Oh, we're going to start making rebellions against Rome. If there's hope that we will rebel against Rome, people will lose their lives in battle. Rabbi Gamliel's interest is we have to build up the spiritual stature of the Jewish people, Sanhedrin. So you see how these are interrelated. The code words are, if you are one of those who believes that Churban Bayit Sheni is an irreversible fact of history, then that means, though we are in Eretz Yisrael, we are in deep Golos, and therefore Mariv, the tefillah of night and Golos, is obligatory. If this is a passing stage in time, and Mehero Yibane Beit HaMikdash, very speedily it will be rebuilt, then Mariv is optional, and Megillat Esther has no place being in the Tanakh. Great story, all the rest, but Tanakh, it's not of great relevance for the rest of history. This is the big snitch on Rabbi Yehoshua, because it's not merely a machloket of whether Mariv is Rishut or Chova. We're talking about how are we supposed to view the period of time in which we live, and it's going to make all the difference in the world to millions of Jews. We have to know what we're going to do. Does Rabbi Yehoshua at any point ever change his position? So first of all, as I started saying, this difference of opinion between the rabbis, Megillat Ta'anit, all of the 40 Yom Tovim, if the Churban is final, then all of those miracles that took place during the period of the second Beit HaMikdash are no longer relevant to us. It's all over. It happened and it's all over. If we hold that the Megillat Ta'anit is still operational, it means that we have suffered a temporary setback, but we're going to make it. Ultimately, the Gemara is going to say that of the 40 miracles that are established as Yom Tov, Megillat Ta'anit, all of them are bottled, all of them are over, except for two, Purim and Chanukah. Because Chazal saw that Purim and Chanukah have eternal significance to the Jewish people. We will see that Rabbi Akiva was one of those who even after Rabbi Yehoshua had lost hope, Rabbi Akiva still has hope. Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i still has hope, because they're going to be part of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. And all of a sudden they decide, no, Churban HaBayit was a passing episode. Famous Gemara. You know what's important? You know what adds to the confusion? and Ramban. I mean, the Ramban comes many years later, but they knew this too. There is a tokach in Parshat B'chukotai, and there's a tokach in Parshat Ki Tavo. There are the curses of B'chukotai, the curses of Ki Tavo. The Ramban says that the curses of Parshat B'chukotai talk about the first period of the first Beit HaMikdash. The curses in Parshat Ki Tavo talk about the period of the second Beit HaMikdash. But there's such a significant difference between the two. At the end of the tokacha in the Chukotai, it ends with a blessing. V'zacharti ez b'risi Yaakov, v'afed b'riti Yitzchak, v'afad b'riti Avram, ezkor v'horetz ezkor. God says, I will remember the covenant that I entered into with Yaakov and with Yitzchak and with Avram, and I will remember Eretz Yisrael. There is no blessing at the end of the tokacha in Ki Tavo. So therefore it's open-ended. They have no way of understanding it. Anything in the next parasha it says, for Anochi Haster Astir Panai Bayomahu, I'm going to conceal myself before you from on that day. And the Gemara says, Esther Min HaTorah Rinayin, where do we learn Esther from the Torah from that pasuk? Anochi Haster Astir Panai Bayomahu. So they don't know how to look at the period of time in which they find themselves. Famous Gemara, left hand side of the page, down at the bottom. Shuv Tamachat. There was another time. Hayu Olam Yerushalayim. These are the rabbis, amongst them is Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yehoshua. They were once going up to Yerushalayim, Kivin Shehigiyu Lahar HaTzofim, when they came to Mount Scopus, Korbu Bigdeihem, they tore their garments. That's the halacha. You see, as you come closer to Yerushalayim and to the Beit HaMikdash, and obviously we're talking, it's after the Korban, they tore their garments. Kivin Shehigiyu Lahar HaBayit, when they arrived at Har HaBayit, Rol Shuol, Yotzei Mibei Kodshei HaKadoshim, they saw a fox going out of the Holy of Holies. The rabbis began to cry, the Rabbi Akiva mitzachek, and Rabbi Akiva is laughing. On the low, or I would say better, no, he may even be laughing, not just smiling. On the low, so they said to him, Mipnei ma'atlo mitzachek, why are you laughing? On the lahem, so he said to them, Mipnei ma'atem bochim, why are you crying? On the low, so they said to him, Makom Shakaturpo, the place about which it says in Torah Vahazor HaKorei, Yumas. One who is not a Kohen who comes there is going to die. Ba'achshav Shualim Yuchubo, now there are foxes running around at that place that was the holiest of holies. Velo Nifkem, we shouldn't cry. Amalahem, so he says, Lakachani Mitzachek. Precisely because of this reason, I am laughing. Dehatir. The 8th chapter in Yeshayahu 8, it says the following, V'o'idoli eidim ne'emanim. I brought this testimony to sign a document. It seems some kind of a document that Yeshayahu is signing. And I brought the trustworthy witnesses at Uriah HaKohen, that Zechariah ben Yerachyahu, Uriah HaKohen and Zechariah ben Yerachyahu, V'chima inyan Uriah etzel Zechariah. What relationship is there between Uriah HaKohen and Zechariah? Uriah was the Mikdash Rishon. Uriah lived during the time of the first Beit HaMikdash. Zechariah was one of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola at Mikdash Sheni, the second Beit HaMikdash. Ella, you know why the two of them appear in Yeshayahu with one pasuk? Because one is dependent and hinges on the other. Ella Tola HaKatov Nevuatosho Zechariah Uriah. The prophecy of Zechariah is dependent on the prophecy of Uriah. But Uriah said, what was it that Uriah had said? Lachem biglalchem Sion Soda Techaresh. Because of your sins, you know what's going to happen? Sion, the Beit HaMikdash, is going to be plowed under. Ubi Zechariah said, you know what it says in Zechariah? Old men and old women are going to sit in the streets of Yerushalayim children are going to play, the city is going to be full of joy. Two contradictory prophecies. Says Rabbi Akiva to the Chachamim, Ad shalon in kaima nevuato shel Uriah. As long as the terrible prophecy of Uriah had not been fulfilled, Hayiti mityarei, I was afraid, shelo tikayei nevuato shel Zechariah, that the prophecy of Zechariah would not be fulfilled. Achso, but now that I see that the prophecy of Churban, of destruction of Uriah, has been fulfilled, and there are foxes on the Makom Beit HaMikdash, now I know biyodua shenevuato shel Zechariah mitkayemet. Now I know for sure that the prophecy of Zechariah, that there will be a great rejuvenation in Yerushalayim, I know that it's going to be fulfilled. The Loshon Hazeh on the low. These are the words that the rabbi said to him, Akiva nichamtanu, Akiva nichamtanu. Akiva, you have consoled us. Akiva, you have consoled us. One of the rabbis who was there was Rabbi Yehoshua. Obviously, Rabbi Yehoshua now is no longer so certain that Marav is Rishus. He is no longer so certain that there is going to be a reconstruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Rabbi Yehoshua, by the force of events, has joined the camp of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Rabbi Akiva, and because of this, Rabbi Akiva is going to remain absolutely firm in his position. It's not all over yet. And therefore, he's going to be one of those who will back Bar Kochba 70 years after Churban HaBayit in the great rebellion against Rome. One more Gemara on the other side. And this is a Gemara that I have studied year after year after year, and I only decided to put it, Zerat said on the other side this morning, and this was the topic of my shiur last night in Efrat. I took it off the Efrat page, understand? The second underlying keta is a dialogue that I've spoken about in the past. Shalu Talmidot et Rav Shimon ben Yochai. The students asked Rav Shimon ben Yochai. And it's simply because on the basis of this morning's shiur, I have a new understanding of this Gemara. The students of Rav Shimon ben Yochai asked their great Rebbe, Mipnei man et chayu son'en shel Yisrael sheval tolad dor kloya. Why were the enemies of Israel? That's a euphemistic way of saying the Jewish people. Why were the Jewish people in the days of Mordechai and Esther? Why in those days were they under threat of total destruction? Strange dialogue. They ask their Rebbe a philosophical question. Why was there a threat? Now, wait a minute. First of all, you know what interests me over here is? In the Gemara in Brachas, who was the questioner? Who was the Talmud that was asking the question? Rav Shimon ben Yochai. It's the next generation, and now Rav Shimon ben Yochai has students, and it is his students who ask him a question of great philosophical import. When Rav Shimon ben Yochai asked Rabbi Yehoshua, is Mariv Rishut HaChova? We have explained he's asking him more than a simple question of Mariv Rishut HaChova. He's asking, give me a Das Torah assessment of the generation in which we live. Is it Churban or is it not? And therefore, if this is what he wants to know, he is absolutely justified 100% in going to Rabbi Gamliel and asking the Shaila all over again. Because about this, you can ask for a second opinion. He has to understand the meaning of the times. And he's the Talmud. And then at the end of the Gemara finally lets us in on the seeker's vote. To Talmud was Rav Shimon Yochai. A generation has passed. The God of Israel now is Rav Shimon ben Yochai. Does he know for sure how to assess the time? His students ask him, Rebbe, why was there the threat of total destruction upon the Jews in the days of Mordechai and Esther? Do you know what this dialogue is? This dialogue is a question that they want to understand from what happened then, how are we supposed to look at the period of time in which we live? That's what they wanted to know. And therefore, strange thing that you hardly ever find in Shas, Amalahem, what was his response to this great question? Amalahem, he said to them, in what can you tell me? What are you talking about? Rebbe, like Reb Shimon ben Yochai. The giant Reb Shimon ben Yochai tells the students, you tell me. So they tell him, you know why there was a threat of total destruction? Because Jews had enjoyed the party of Ahasuerus. So Rabbi Gamliel, Reb Shimon ben Yochai says, well, if so, Shebishushan Yaharogu, those Jews of Shushan should be killed. Shebichol, all of the whole world, Jews should be killed because Jews in Shushan enjoyed a party. Amru lo. So they said to him, Awaratos, and now the students turn around and say to the Rebbe, okay, you tell us. Amalahem, so Reb Shimon ben Yochai says, you know why? Because Jews bowed down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. 45 years earlier, Nebuchadnezzar made a statue. The strangeness of the dialogue is because it's a generation later. And Reb Shimon ben Yochai is the Rebbe. And now I can imagine that Reb Shimon ben Yochai, as his students asking this question, and the reason why they're asking the question is they want to take the events of the past, the history, what can we learn from there to our present situation? And therefore he says, you must have thought about this. This is not a simple question. It's a question of assessing a period of time in which there is darkness. We have no prophet who can tell us what it really means. So he says, you tell me. Is it possible also that they want to figure out, does what happened in the days of Mordechai and Esther, is that true now? Maybe the period of time in which we live, we're not going to have the same problem as in the days of Mordechai and Esther. Maybe things are going to change. Jews are not bowing down to statues. Jews are not enjoying the party of Nebuchadnezzar. Jews are fighting against Rome. Maybe we're going to make it through this period of time. So here the generation passes, and there's still the question, because without the benefit of Nevuah, without the benefit of prophecy, so then we're talking about people who are in the dark. They are in the dark. They don't know. They don't know what the future holds. There's no longer any prophecy. So therefore they have to arrive at some kind of an assessment of the situation on the basis of the past. We can therefore understand, just as Jews can be passionate, very passionate today, about assessing what is the meaning of the period of time in which we live, because it makes a great deal of difference. If you see what's taking place over here, difficult to see it in the last few years. I mean, the last few years we're going, I'm going to keep this to Torah. Okay, it's not good. Let's just say it's not good. As somebody I recall wrote, the shoe doesn't fit, and they want to keep wearing the shoe. Right? Oh, Rabbi Wein? Okay. Shoe doesn't fit. He's right. Zelochetz miot. Zelochetz. And insist. And we insist on wearing the shoe that doesn't fit. I mean, we are in an extremely difficult period of time. Very, very, very difficult. Is there anybody who knows or can predict what the meaning of all of these things are happening? I mean, I'll tell you, you should know, one of my favorite Sifrei HaTanakh, and I haven't taught that yet over here, one of my favorite Sifrei Tanakh, for years I learned Yirmiyahu. I still don't know Yirmiyahu, but I'll tell you, when I read this morning that Amnata is going to be given over to the Palestinian Authority, that's the Anatot. Yirmiyahu was echad min hakohanim
of Anatot. Anatot was a city of Kohanim. And Anata is going to be given over, and that's not part of Yerushalayim. Of course it's part of Yerushalayim. Of course it's part of Greater Yerushalayim. Is there any way to assess the situation? What kind of a period are we living through? Maybe we have the right to assume. And that's why Megillat Esther became part of the Kitvei HaKodesh. Because there's one message, one historic message in all of Megillat Esther. And that is V'nahafochu. The situation can change dramatically from one moment to the next. How many times have I said it, that the rule in modern Jewish history is expect the unexpected, from one day to the next? By the way, you need Valium to take you from one day to the next, you understand? Yesterday, negotiations with Syria are going to begin again in 6 weeks. They have it all figured out, you understand? 6 weeks. 6 weeks, that's right. 6 weeks, Barak has to bake matzahs. He has no time now for... he has to bake matzahs. 6 weeks. And then somebody else says, no, 3 weeks. They have it all figured out. And then this morning you open up the paper, and what do you find out in the paper? That Assad holds that Barak is too weak to... are they playing games with us, with our emotions? It's a roller coaster, it's up and down. Is there any way to assess the situation? Is there any way to know what's going to happen next? And you know, they can still say that Yerushalayim is going to remain forever sovereign. Lanetzach. And then, so it depends. It depends, of course, on how you define Yerushalayim. If you define Yerushalayim as Rechavia and Har Nof will remain under Israeli sovereignty, Lanetzach. But Abu Dis and Zakariah and Obadiah and all of the rest and Shuafat, that's not Yerushalayim. I wasn't lying to you. There's some American president that made a statement like that, but I'm not going to dirty up the tape with it, you know. Depends on how you define it. I did not have. Okay, all right. Ultimately, Megillat Esther becomes part of the Tanakh. As Rav Kook says, and he didn't know, he died in 35. Rav Kook died before the Shoah. He says it is relevant for all of history, because what happened then can happen at any moment in Jewish history. The Rav Soloveitchik said the message you have to take away from Megillat Esther is, in every period in history there can be a Satan, and that Satan Amalek will make it his goal and his objective to destroy the Jewish people. And we have to be on guard. That's what Megillat Esther is all about. Not to say that this is not important, that that's not important. So what the press says in Egypt? So what they're saying in Syria? It's a garbage for garbage. That's not the real thing. The responsibility of a Jew is to assume that the worst can happen at any moment in time. And at the same time that the worst can possibly happen, always the hope that the Nahafohu, that was Rabbi Akiva, it's all going to change. Everything's going to change. Nichamtanu Akiva, Nichamtanu. Speaking about Nechama, Shulamit Supar is back with us this morning. She sat Shiva, what was it, 2 weeks ago for a brother in Baltimore passed away. Amokim Menachamot Tach Betov, Shadav and Hitzin, Yerushalayim. Chag Sameach.